one spouse will say, you know, I have told my husband 1,000 times, and he still does the same thing over and over again. What they'll say is they're trying to communicate. And typically women are better communicators than men. And men struggle to kind of verify what they're hearing from their wives and then follow through with it.
It's such a basic ingredient in our everyday lives. Communication, talking, and listening, hopefully. And when we don't do it well, which most of us don't, there are games we play.
One of the ways both spouses can try to use control in the relationship is by either not listening, or we call selective listening, or ignoring the situation because they don't want to change.
Welcome to another edition of Come Receive the Light from the Orthodox Christian Network in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Our host, whom you'll hear from in just a moment, is Father Christopher Metropoulos, and I'm Mike Trout. Listening. That's the topic we're going to tackle again this week. We're continuing a conversation, or at least listening to a conversation we started last week. And let me begin with a couple of quotes about listening. Winston Churchill said, "Courage is what it takes to stand up and speak, and courage is also what it takes to sit down and listen." Stephen Covey, the business guru, said, "Seek first to understand, then to be understood." And then I like this from Peter Drucker, another business guru. "The most important thing in communication is to hear what isn't being said." Boy, it's a tough process to understand and to learn. And it is really a learning process, whether it starts in the early years at home or a bit later when you get married and your spouse have to sort it all out. Or maybe you're at work and you're dealing with understanding how to communicate properly. It's all very, very important, and we're going to, as I said, tackle it again this week with a guest that Father Chris spoke with by phone a couple of weeks ago. Now, if you missed the broadcast last week, you can catch it on our website. Just go to myocn.net, that's myocn.net, and click on the CRTL link, and you'll find the program from last week right there. Let's jump right back into that conversation on effective listening with our host, Father Chris, and Dr. Ari Christofides.
Better communication, I would think, solves problems. At least that has been my experience. How about for you? Any examples?
What I see it doing is it's step one to then learning how to compromise in any relationship. So it is a key towards resolution, solution, better relationships, finding ways through problem areas. It's the beginning step. It's the foundation, I think. But let me add something to that. It's one of the problem areas that is not talked about enough when it comes to listening and communicating is the atmosphere. In order for it to be successful, the atmosphere must be safe. So one of the things that I talk a lot with couples about is creating a safe environment. Because you can go into a house and there's no chaos, so to speak. There's no abusive language. There's no screaming. There might be just silence. And that's because the husband and wife or whomever is just not talking to each other anymore. They're not talking because they don't feel safe. So in order to communicate, in order to listen, the person must feel safe enough to share something with that other person.
Why do they not feel safe, Ari? Can you explain that a little bit? I mean, for someone not to feel safe, you think physically safe, space-wise, emotionally, where are we?
Number one, it's emotionally.
Okay.
And to the extreme, it would be physically.
Okay.
But the majority of the time is you don't feel emotionally safe. And I'll give you just a couple examples. One is a spouse will say, "I don't want to talk to my wife because when I try to say something to her, all she does is yell at me." Or a wife will say to me, "I don't want to talk to my husband because he completely dismisses what I have to say. He doesn't listen. I don't feel like what I have to say has any value to him." So whether it's being feeling like it's verbally aggressive or it's dismissive, in the end, the foundation issue there is they're not feeling safe. So to feel safe, you feel like respected, heard, that you have a platform whereby you can communicate a piece of information, and the other person will listen and may not agree with it, which is okay, mm-hmm. but you can share and then maybe have some dialogue about compromise. But again, they won't even go to that level if they don't feel safe.
You know, I often say, Ari, that we buy gifts for people we hate, and we forget to buy gifts for people we love. And it's just amazing to me how we can, you know, shower praise and listen to complete strangers. But when it comes to our own family, our spouses, our children, I don't have time. I'm busy. Leave me alone. I guess maybe because we feel we can get away with it there, and we can't necessarily get away with it in our relationships. I don't know. Do you have a comment about that?
Yes. No, I think you sparked something. You remind me of something that I hear often amongst family members. I will say something, you know, just a very simple comment, nothing extraordinary. And a family member will say, oh, yes, right. And then I'll hear a chuckle or I'll hear an outburst from the other family member saying, I have been telling you that for years. It's only because Ari said it that you're going to understand or listen to it. I've been trying to tell you that for years. I've been saying the same thing, and I'll hear that often. And to me, that just tells me that there's just poor listening at home and not enough respect at home.
All right, I'm going to throw this one at you. I know a couple that one person leaves their dirty laundry all over the house, and the other person chronically spends too much money. Can talking about the problem using a new communication technique really change that kind of behavior?
Alone, no. No, it cannot. It can begin the process of good change, but it cannot in and of itself change it. Because what has to come is first, yes, there has to be good listening. That's the beginning stage of it. But what has to come after that is insight and learning and understanding of why they are the way they are, and to teach them how they can support each other and make real changes.
So listening to growth is what we're talking about.
Well, yeah.
Or listening for growth.
It's the beginning.
Right.
So, but good listening alone, no. It won't change your behavior.
Okay. Now, you regularly lead seminars for couples. What have you found to be the most common communication problem since we're speaking about listening here?
Couple themes, you know, typically come about, which is that one spouse will say, you know, I have told my husband 1,000 times and he still does the same thing over and over again. So what they'll say is they're trying to communicate. And typically women are better communicators than men. And men struggle to kind of verify what they're hearing from their wives and then follow through with it. So a common theme is the wife is typically trying to send that message, and the husband is not, what's the word, recognizing it or registering it. That's the word I wanted to say. Mm-hmm. And that is a very common problem. But because it's a seminar versus me sitting down with them in the session, you know, I'd want to follow up with that and understand why, what's going on there. And in my own sessions, if I could elaborate and connect the two, there's another theme there, which is typically control. One of the ways both spouses can try to use control in the relationship is by either not listening, or we call selective listening, mm-hmm. or just ignoring the situation because they don't want to change. So if there is good listening, if there's a healthy exchange between a husband and wife, then you have to now take ownership for having heard and understood what your spouse said. Now that requires change. And people are afraid to change. So oftentimes one of the things that contributes to poor listening is a fear of having to change. When something is revealed to you and you learn new knowledge, now you are responsible. So if you don't listen and you dismiss things, you don't have to change.
Right.
So there's a very subtle kind of unhealthy thing, that's a pattern that's evolving there within relationships often.
I wonder if there are any books or videos out there. I mean, does everybody need a therapist? Does every couple that is having trouble communicating need a therapist now? I mean, what's your experience?
No, I don't think everybody needs a therapist, but it wouldn't hurt for people to get kind of a checkup here and there with
mm-hmm. like a doctor. Sure.
I think there are a lot of books out there, and there are some books on listening and being better listeners. I think, to be honest, as a Christian, we have to live our faith the way it has been shown by Christ's example, and reading how he showed us true humility. And so many of these problems, I think, would go away if we really practiced our faith in a real sincere way of being humble. Mm-hmm. Because if we have wronged our spouse or our child or our parent or our friend or our sibling, we have to be able to show some humility and listen to what they have to say of how we've acted towards them. And with some humility, humility requires good listening. You know, one of my favorite quotes is from Proverbs, and I'm not sure if it's Proverbs 1 or 2, but it says, "Reprimand a fool, he'll ever be more foolish. Reprimand a wise man, he'll ever be more wise." You know, and to me, that is the crux of ego and humility. The fool is too egotistical and being hurt by someone telling him to do something differently. And the wise man is taking in what is being criticized of his behavior, and he's learning and becoming wiser from it.
We've been talking about listening in the context of marriage, but it can equally be important, I would think, between parents and children, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
How so?
Well, I think the number one mistake parents make, and I'm guilty of this as well, is when we are about to say something to our child, is we forget the age and the developmental stage of our child, and we are typically saying something from an adult, mature mind versus the mind of the child. And I think oftentimes we wonder why the children don't understand us or follow through. It oftentimes is because, you know, whether they're 4, 5, 6, 7, 10, 12, 15, 18 years old, their mind and where they are in their maturity is very different than where we are as the adult. So I think we often make the mistake when we're communicating to the children of where are they? What words and what expression can make most sense to them, whether they're 5, 10, or 15 years of age, even 20 and 25 years of age? You know, I see a lot of problems with young adults today in their early 20s with their parents.
Yes.
You know, they're maybe 22 years old, but they're acting like a 15-year-old. So we have to adjust as parents, as adults, we have to adjust our message to the maturity level of our child.
Well, that makes sense. I mean, I know there are a lot of parents who feel their kids don't listen to them.
Right.
And then there are a lot of kids who say, hey, you know, my parents don't listen to me. Why won't they understand me? I'm growing up.
Yeah.
So you've got, you know, these two, planets that are coming into conflict with each other.
Yeah.
And many times if one doesn't sit back, I guess the parent is really the one who needs to step back and use their wisdom, use their age, use their skill to communicate appropriately. And you went towards that before when you said when you listen to people and you speak to them, you have to do it in an age-appropriate way, right?
Yes.
Okay. Well, finally, teenage years are notoriously challenging for parents and their children. And there's cannot be a human being listening to this program who can't agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any tips on how parents can better communicate with their teens? And you said it before, to college students.
Well, a couple of just simple tools to keep in mind. One is you have to break the cycle of lecturing. When they finally have a moment where their teenager is sitting across from them and they feel like this is their golden moment to
unload,
teach them world history of life, and then they go off for 25 minutes. Well, the teenager's tuned out after 30 seconds. So one of the things I would say to the parent of a teenager is you just focus on one issue, one topic, and present it to your teenager within 30 to 60 seconds, and then ask your teenager to repeat back what she or he, the father or mother, are talking about, because then it requires that teenager to listen. Because when they're lecturing, they're not asking for feedback from the teenager. They're just embarking on this long, you know, like drawn-out complaint to their teenager, typically. So you have to engage them. And you have to do it in very short, simple ways. And then you can begin the dialogue. Because the teenager now, with the further development of their own brains, they want to have better understanding, and they will often challenge their parent. So they want to have oftentimes a dialogue, but they want to be heard as well. So if you want to have a dialogue, show respect to your teenager. Give them a little bit of information within 60 seconds. What is it you want to talk about? Present your side of it. Ask your teenager then to repeat. Do you understand what I'm saying? Because sometimes teenagers are not paying attention, and they completely miss what you're saying.
Yeah.
That's why it's so important to say, what did I say? You said something about me on the weekend. Right, okay. Yeah, you weren't listening to me, were you? All right, I said about at 4 o'clock on Saturday, I need you to do this for me. Oh, yeah, yeah, 4. See, so they're not listening. So by engaging them that way, you make them listen better. And then they're going to want to say something about that themselves. And a lot of times parents don't want to hear anything. They just want to say, no, do this, and do what I tell you. Well, by the time they're teenagers, that doesn't fly for them anymore. They want to have some say. And so parents need to at least engage them to show them they're listening to what they may want to do, even though the parent may not give them permission. They have to begin the process of showing that they can have a dialogue with their teenager.
Ari, it's always a pleasure and a fascinating time to have you on the program. Thanks for being with us today. Remember, parents, that the best listener was the Mother of God, the Theotokos, who listened at that first time to receive the Christ child. Thank you, Ari.
Thank you, Father. Thank you so much for having me.
As I was listening to that interview, and yes, I was listening, I was thinking that some of the conversations we have on the broadcast are targeted to specific listeners, and others may steer in a different direction and reach a different group of people. Well, this particular conversation certainly has something for everyone. And as I said earlier, if you missed the first part of our interview with Ari Christofides, then you can hear it when you go to our website at myocn.net. Click on the CRTL link and listen to last week's broadcast, and listen again to this week's broadcast, and share with your friends the fact that we are there with that website and a whole lot more than just this broadcast. We're a nonprofit ministry that reaches around the world, and we depend upon the support of listeners just like yourself. And we have a great way for you to get involved all summer long. One of our supporters has stepped forward and said that they would match any gift that comes in during the months of June, July, and August to the Orthodox Christian Network. So that's a way that your contribution can be doubled. Consider becoming a partner with us. Just go to the website, click on the Donate Now button there on the homepage, and learn about all the ways you can join with us. That's myocn.net.
Most people today know very little about history, Father. And I want to go back a little bit and learn about the Serbian people, a little bit about the Yugoslav War. Tell us, if you would, about the church before that. And specifically, how did it fare under communism?
That question is being asked of Father Milovan Katanic, who is the pastor of St. George Serbian Orthodox Church in Elizabeth, New Jersey. And Father Chris wanted to share with you, the listeners, a bit of the history of the Serbian Orthodox Church, not only here in the United States, but also in Serbia. And I'm going to share with you just an excerpt from a much longer discussion, which we will have available on the website at myocn.net.
Communism was a terrible, horrendous period in our church history, in the history of the Serbian people. But then let's not forget that the Serbs were also under Turkish rule for 600 years.
Yes.
Let's not forget that the Serbian church established by St. Sava was raised to the level of a patriarchate in the mid-14th century. And once the Turks took over, after the death of Patriarch Arsenius in the mid-15th century, a successor was not selected. And so the patriarchate, in fact, was abolished, and the Serbian church kind of, if you will, backtracked. Later, of course, that patriarchate was restored, but then once again it was abolished. And it was during that time that the church was suffered a spiritual decline with the so-called Phanariot bishops, the Greek bishops that were sent to the Serbian lands. And they didn't, of course, understand the Serbian people, the Serbian mentality. And that was a period that great numbers of Christians converted to Islam to avoid severe taxes imposed by them, imposed by the Turks. And then, of course, we had the uprisings, and then the Balkan Wars came, and then World War One. And then after World War II, the church experienced, as you mentioned, communism, new trials under the communists who prohibited teaching of religion in schools, confiscated the property of the church, and used various means of persecution in order to diminish the influence the church had over the people. So it's been, our history is much suffering. I always liked the Bishop Nikolai Vilimirovich. You know, he talks about the three virtues of the Russian people, the Greek people, and the Serbian people. He says the Russian people are have the virtue of piety. They're really a pious people. The Greek people have the virtue of almsgiving. They're a loving people and a giving people. And the Serbian people have the virtue of martyrdom. That's our history and our place, I guess, on the globe in the Balkans. Kind of, we always find ourselves in the middle of conflicts and wars.
It is amazing, Father. You know, when you think about, I was listening to you talking about communism, listening to you talking about the Turkish oppression, and yet all of those governments, all of those forms of government have fallen.
Right.
And yet Christ, the faith, God bless the faith of the people, has continued the church for centuries, despite these incredible hardships and cruelties that have literally been inflicted upon them. But really, that's been the way from the time of Christ, is it not?
I think that we could just look at the Russia. Look at the resurrection of of Russia after communism and the millions that were killed under and persecuted under communist rule in the Soviet Union. And just take a look at their celebrations and their spiritual manifestations over there and just the life of the church in Russia. And you can see exactly what you're talking about, the resurrection of the church. And
Vibrant.
Now,
we speak about violence against the church. We speak about targeting churches, targeting clergy, that it was a terrible time for everyone. Can you tell us any more about this specific time?
Yeah, in the 90s.
Yes.
That was a very difficult time for us. It was terrible. It was horrible. But, you know, through God's providence, just to piggyback on what you just mentioned about how God watches and protects us, we were given during that time in the 90s, and I don't know if you remember this, a patriarch that was revered and respected and loved by all of Orthodoxy, and that's Patriarch Pavle.
Yes.
He was a true holy man, considered by many who came in contact with him to be a walking saint. And the church was attacked, and it was. And we spoke of, and you know, the role of our Orthodox Church in Greece and Russia and Romania and Serbia, we're tied with the people, and automatically they think of nationalism, and during the war, of course, the church was attacked, and they were. You know, one time I remember the foreign journalist asked the patriarch about the endeavors of this greater Serbia, and whether the church is working with the government in this project of creating this greater Serbia. And the patriarch responded and said that if a greater Serbia would have to be created through crime, he doesn't want it. He said even if a smaller Serbia would have to exist through crime, he doesn't want it. He says if there is only one Serb, and if I am that last Serb, and I have to exist through crime, I don't accept that either. May we all then disappear, but disappear as humans. Because then we will not disappear, but will be alive in the hands of the living God.
Amazing.
And that became his catchphrase, Patriarch Pavle, during the war, Budimo ljudi, that we be humans, that, you know, we have to fast, we have to go to church, we have to do all these things, but we have to be, you know, the basics of just being human beings.
Mm-hmm. Father, let's talk about since the war. What is the current situation within the Serbian church?
Well, that's an interesting phrase, that since the war. Because, bombs fell on Serbia during the war. But since the war, it seems that Serbia continues being bombed, albeit not militarily, not literally, but we continue to fight for our Serbian lands, more specifically for Kosovo and Metohija, and against the illegal and unilateral recognition of the independence of Kosovo And that issue of Kosovo Metohija has been addressed by the Holy Assembly of Bishops of the Serbian Orthodox Church for years now. And the annual Assembly of Bishops just finished their annual meeting their May session last week, and they noted, among other things, that the, and I quote, presence of NATO forces in Kosovo and Metohija, including the latest process of negotiations at the highest level in Brussels, brought neither justice nor a solution, and Serbian people continue to suffer in the province after the destruction and desecration of Orthodox churches and monasteries, the expulsion of hundreds of thousands of Serbs, organ trafficking, which has been proven, and other similar misdeeds. Now a milder violence and softer terror is at play, with the barbaric destruction of tombstones, murders, attacks on property, the ghettoization, the daily threats. In a word, there's very little to that which, with their presence, the European Union and NATO are left to guarantee and left to protect. Mm-hmm. So it's not a very...
Not a good picture.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, your answer, I think your question was more of the church. And the church is alive. You know, the churches are being built, renovated. There are beautiful spiritual manifestations throughout the diocese in Serbia. Of course, this is a jubilee year for the Orthodox and for all Christians, with the 1700th anniversary of the Edict of Milan. And this anniversary is celebrated especially in Serbia, considering the fact that the Holy Emperor Constantine was born in the modern-day Serbian city of Niš. And this year's annual Assembly of Bishops completed their session with the Divine Liturgy and celebration of that anniversary on a local level on the feast day of Saints Constantine and Helen last Monday. And this fall in October will be the all-Orthodox, all-Christian celebration of that anniversary.
Let's go across the seas for a minute, from Serbia to the United States. How do we connect the Serbian parishes here in the U.S. with a church in Serbia?
Well, I would say that we are very connected. And we remain connected. As I mentioned, the Holy Assembly of Bishops just finished their annual meeting, and it was something that was closely, every year, it's closely watched by American Serbs and the Serbian parishes here in this country, because the decisions over there that they make affect us, you know, with the new bishops and just all the other decisions. Not to mention the war and all the refugees after the war that came in the 90s, which have made some parishes that were perhaps more English-speaking, a bit more Serbian-speaking. And also we have, in the summer months, many parishioners who go travel, visit families, make pilgrimages. There's a connection with the parishes here, with the parishes with the church in Serbia. Even in the parishes that are predominantly English-speaking, we are very proud. I think that all Orthodox can say this. We're proud of our heritage. We're proud of who we are. And we remember that we are Serbian Orthodox.
Unfortunately, that's all we have time for as we wrap up today's broadcast. But as I mentioned, we will have the entire conversation with Father Katanic on the website at myocn.net. Just click on the CRTL link, and that will take you right to it. That's myocn.net. I'm Mike Trout. Our host is Father Christopher Metropoulos. And special thanks, as always, to our executive producer and anchored. We're located in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, and please remember, we're a nonprofit ministry, and we look forward to your participation with us. And all summer long, June, July, and August, any contribution you make will be doubled. We have a donor who has said they will match any contribution sent in to the ministry during those 3 summer months. So consider what you might do to help us and join with this outreach around the world. Join us again next week as we come back with another edition of Come Receive the Light, and remember to always have faith in what you listen to.